Air on 99.3 Nigeria Info.
We are the nation's number one talk station, 99.3 Nigeria Info. Lovely, lovely morning to you, Lagos, Nigeria. Thank you for joining us again. It's the last hour of the show we call The Crossfire, the show that Lagos listens to. Lagos loves the show because we drive the biggest conversation in the country every weekday, Monday through Friday. We start as early as 5 a.m. That's how early we start. So if you always miss out on our early conversation from 5 a.m., you should stay tuned. We start with the lead, the stories that you should watch out for all through the day. All right, welcome to Last Hour. I'm Sheriff. You can watch live right now on Facebook and on YouTube, where we are streaming live. You can watch, you can see me and my guests already in the studio. We have joining us right now the Vice President, National Association of Resident Doctors, First Vice President, Dr. Christopher Arome Adejo. He joins us very briefly this morning. And then I have in the studio, live in the studio here, Libros Oshoma. He also joins me. Libros, good morning to you. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, good morning, Sherry.
Dr. Christopher, good morning to you. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Sherry. The line is not that clear. I can barely hear you, sir.
Oh, can you
hear me? Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
He's making a cracking noise.
Oh, it's still making that noise?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm
it's
so
affecting my ears.
Oh, I'm so sorry. You know what, Dr. Christopher? Let's try and call you back. Is that okay?
Okay, thank you.
Fantastic. So we'll try and get back to Dr. Christopher Arome to join us, because we need to touch on the doctor strike. Absolutely, we need to. But let's get on with the conversation. Today we discuss some of the national issues every Nigerian is concerned about, really. And that's why we've tagged it State of the Nation. Many more issues apart from the insecurity and general increase in the price of goods and services have also called for immediate action. Among those making the rounds lately are the PIA, the doctor strike, the pardon for surrendered Boko Haram members. You can just name them. It's just so huge. The number of the Petroleum Industry Act is also in the mist somewhere. But all of this, we'll touch on them as we go on. But let me quickly begin by speaking with Libros Oshoma on the doctor strike. Libros, what's your thoughts? I'm sure you must have been following the trend in the doctor strike conversation. What's your thought about it?
Yeah, quite unfortunate, first and foremost. You find situations where our leaders will build, according to them, in their words, world-class hospitals. And yet, when they have the slightest of headache, they will go to less world-class hospitals in other countries for treatment. And you hear pensions for former governors, 100 million naira medical annually in any hospital of their choice, not in Nigeria. They won't confine it to Nigeria. And then also you find situations where even the doctors, to a large extent also, are selfish in terms of carrying everybody in the health sector along. Doctors will go on strike. The moment they come back, nurses will go on strike. Once those one gets back, you hear that the technicians,
Johesu,
exactly.
Yes,
we also go on strike. I think there should be a holistic effort also to ensure that everybody in the health sector is carried along by doctors that are the heads of those sectors. And then lastly, we the people, because we always have alternative. We can always go to some of these private hospitals or in some cases patronize chemists. We would not want to share in the pains of, the
doctors,
the doctors and then the managers of our health sector. So we always find ourselves, arguing between these politicians and what should be done. If we insist... Imagine somebody coming to tell me that President Buhari's medical doctors had been abroad even before now, and so you can excuse him. But it's simple. It's like saying, before I became the MD of Toyota,
yeah,
I was driving
Honda.
And so now that I'm the MD of Toyota, you know, since I have been driving Honda, I will continue to drive Honda. What you are saying is that Toyota is not good enough for you, and yet you are the MD.
Yeah.
You know, the MD of, I forgot it, is it a Mercedes-Benz now, built a bulletproof car. And when they were to test that vehicle,
right,
he was the driver of the vehicle. What that means, it's look, I trust in
it,
my
it was ready to take the bullet.
Yes,
whatever comes out of it.
My product.
Yeah.
You know, it was ready to take the bullet for whatever comes out of it. So if the man who is the driver of the Nigerian project
right
does not have faith in the head sector, including the wife saying, look, there's no Panadol in Aso Rock Clinic.
Yeah.
So, and then we, the rest of the people, are not ready to stand up for this institution, the head sector. Then you will always have strikes.
Indeed.
Will continually have the same problem. The same problem. Salaries, you know, provision of facilities for the sector, and, you know, all kinds of, you know, minor things that ordinarily shouldn't be.
Indeed. Let's quickly speak with Dr. Christopher Adejo this morning. We're struggling to get him on the telephone. Hopefully, once we're able to do that, because we need to hear, there was a meeting on Friday that ran into Saturday, early Saturday morning, and we're hearing so many things in the news. Dr. Christopher, can you hear me clearly now?
Yeah, I can hear you clearly.
Fantastic. So please, let's get on with this conversation. What is the update about your strike? We're hearing that there was a Saturday evening / early morning meeting. How did that go?
Okay, thank you. Actually, there was a meeting from 2 p.m. on Friday that went into the wee hours of Saturday morning. We reconvened on Saturday until about 11 p.m. But it was a meeting between the Nigerian Medical Association and the government representatives on the directive of Mr. President.
Okay.
We were invited by the president of the Nigerian Medical Association so he can get first-hand information from us during the meetings. So that was it.
But tell us, what transpired really after that meeting? What was the outcome of the meeting? Because initially we heard that, you know, the strike may be coming to an end. Is that the situation? Is that the case?
No, well, if you heard that the strike was coming to an end, it was a false information, because we've never said anything like that. We are predisposed to the strike ending. That is the truth. And all what was discussed at the meeting was what we have previously discussed so many times.
Okay.
But the problem was that at the end of the meeting, they wanted a memorandum of understanding to be signed. Now, we told them that you want, and they insisted that Nad must sign. We said, one, we were not officially invited to this meeting. Okay. We came to give information. Two, you took us to court. We are in court. You can't ask us to come and sign another MOU when we are in court. Why not remove that case from the court? Then the third one, we said that, look, there are some clauses in that memorandum of understanding that you draft, that was drafted. We need those clauses clearly explained or expunged, because we were interacting with our lawyers. We are on strike because our members, some of our members have not been paid for up to 5 months now. And you are asking us to sign an MOU and go back to work. No action has been done. The same promises that you kept on giving is the same promises there. We have a standing order now from our Congress, our NEC, that we should not sign any paper. That all they need is action. Because you sign a paper, you commit yourself, your people will now be forced to go to work when they don't even have transportation to go to work, when they can't even feed at work. And if they make a mistake, you come calling for their head. Because if a doctor makes any mistake, life might be lost.
It could be devastating.
And when life is lost, nobody will hear sorry. Nobody will hear that you have not eaten. You see, I've always said it, that the first line of prevention is the primary prevention.
Okay.
The primary prevention is removing the source of the hazard. Doctors learn as sources of hazard. Because you don't tell a doctor that I'm not eating to come and treat you. How will he treat you well? And if anything happens, you're not hitting hard and seize his license. So why not prevent him from even treating that patient? Because life is precious. Prevent him from making that mistake first. Tell me, what is hard in government paying the backlog of salaries first?
So some stakeholders, Dr. Christopher, some stakeholders have said that your grouse is with some state government. Why are you taking it up with the federal?
It is a lie. All these stakeholders, in fact, those stakeholders that come and tell you this, they are the cause of the problem. I know Minister of Health is the cause.
I'm not mentioning names, though. I'm just saying.
I will mention the names.
Okay.
You are not mentioning. I am mentioning. Okay. Dr. Christopher Arome is mentioning names.
Okay.
The Minister of Health came online and said it. The Minister of Labour and Employment came online and said it. Now, when you look at our demands, only 1 out of 10 is with the state. Now, even if it's with the state, by right, there is what we call the National Council on Health. This National Council on Health can be convoked by the Minister of Health when there's an emergency. He just convoked one for the cholera outbreak. Now, the National Council of Health is the highest decision body in health. He can convoke it, and it involves all the commissioners of health of every state. They can convoke it, address that state issue. Because are you telling me that the lives of the people going to the state-owned hospital is not important too? Or is it less than those going to federal? So when we say some things, they think we don't know it. This is what we know. But most times, we tend to go gradually so as we won't be seen as being confrontational.
Right.
People going to the state hospitals are human beings. They are Nigerians, full-fledged Nigerians.
That's
when you go out of this country, the first thing they will ask you, which country are you from? They won't ask you, which state are you from? Which country? We are all Nigerians. So be it in the primary healthcare owned by the state, be it in the state general hospital, be it in the federal tertiary center, everybody coming there is in Nigeria. And the Minister of Health, if he really knows his duty, maybe he doesn't know it. So if he doesn't know it, I am not telling him that he can convoke a national health conference. Convoke it. Call all the commissioners of health of all states.
Right.
Let him discuss this and give a marching order. Because health is wealth. Health is number one.
That's right.
Things are not going fine. Things are not going fine. They saw the examination soon. And I'll tell you, 80% of our members will attend that interview.
What do you mean? The Saudi examination, is that what you said?
Saudi people are coming to push our doctors again this week. 2 exams, Lagos and Abuja. And I tell you, I will even be there.
You will be there.
Because I've told myself I will not leave. But now, I think all hope is lost. Because even after a government directive, the number one citizen of this country have directed you solve this issue. You now come to bring it. He told you solve all technicalities. You now come and even added more technicalities.
Dr. Adejo, just to be clear, there is no end to the strike yet. Is that what you're saying?
There is no end. I made a statement, and I feel you have seen it. There is no end. There is no hope. Because, see, I was depressed that day. And I tell myself, are we serious? Are we Nigerians? We play politics with the life of Nigerians. What is wrong in you removing those clauses? If you tell me that the life of Nigerians are really urgent, you are asking me to sign an MOU. Even if my people said I should not sign, because of the lives of Nigerians, okay, let's see and see next time, but please give us a softer landing. Remove this and this. It's give and take. What is wrong? So you want, are you not a master?
What are those clauses, Dr. Arime? What are those clauses? Can you help us with the clauses?
Number one, the Minister of Labour and Employment confirmed that, even the PAMSEC confirmed that they have invoked no work, no pay.
Okay.
Now, we told them, people have not been paid for up to 4 months. That's why we went on strike. We didn't go on strike for any fresh demand. Now, what is the penalty for work without pay? How did you penalize those people? Can you go and seize their 4 months salaries for not paying us for 4 months? Because obviously, it's not the Minister of Labor that pays.
Okay.
So, can you go and seize their salaries first? Let them see what we are feeling. You cannot do that. Fine. So, you cannot penalize us for asking for a legitimate demand. And you went to court, asking the court to give you reason why you will not implement no work on us. The matter is still in court, and you are implementing it. We won't sign anything that has that. We will not. Anything we sign will clearly state that they will, even if we know that you people have history of not keeping to the memorandum of understanding of action addendum that you started, then at least because of the lives of Nigerians. You understand?
Yeah.
Every one of us should try and be reasonable. So, and all they do is to come and be talking about Hippocratic Code, which they don't even understand. Imagine somebody telling me that I am not patriotic. You, the PAMSEC, the minister, that they are paying you with my tax, that you are traveling up and down, going on vacation, me that trained abroad and came back to work. You are telling me I'm not patriotic. Who is more patriotic out of the two of us?
Dr. Arime, I will come back to you much later during the week to have further conversations with you. Thank you so much for joining us on the Crossfire this morning, though. Thank you for the update. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Sheriff.
There you go. The first vice president, the resident Dr. Snard, Arime Christopher Adejo. Liberos.
Like I said, it is easy for government to throw patriotism in your face. You are not patriotic. And yet, these same people are far, very far from being patriotic. They don't even know the meaning of patriotism. Because a situation where you go on a trip that you ordinarily ought not to go. Let's not even talk about medical tourism now.
Let's go to break, Liberals. When we return, we'll dive deeper. Lagos, do join us again. We'll be right back.
Morning Crossfire on 99.3 Nigeria Info.
The nation's number one talk station, 99.3 Nigeria Info. 8:34 is the time from our studios this morning. Lagos, thank you all for being a part of our conversation today. Let's go on now. I have Liberos Oshoma here, we're gonna, because we tagged the show State of the Nation, we have so many other topics, you know, packed in 1 hour. So we're gonna move on to our next conversation right now. But hey, you're free to talk on any of the issues that we will be touching on, all right? Liberos, again, thank you for coming through. We've discussed the doctor's strike, but quickly, let's move on to another issue now, and that is the pardoning of surrendered Boko Haram members, commanders, their families, and the rest of them. What's your thought on this? Because, I mean, if you've been following up in the news, which I believe that you have been, northern elites have been staunchly against the pardoning of these surrendered Boko Haram members. They have, you know, given their reasons as to, you know, how do you want these communities, the members of these communities, to feel when they see the person that killed their father, the person that killed their family, their brothers, their sisters, their wife? How do you want them to feel?
What the government is basically telling us is that we are helpless. So we can't bring these people to book. And so since we can't bring them to book, so you better live with it, live with them. And, you know, we're tired. So because it is good to pardon somebody who has truly repented.
Mm.
But is that the way we have been pardoning, you know, repentant people in the country? Is that the way we have been, you know, pardoning other criminals who also have truly, you know, repented, in some cases rehabilitated? Because after all, our prison facilities are rehabilitation centers.
Mm.
You know, is that the way? If that's not the way, so yeah. Why do you now want to start with this, or rather continue with this? Because I remember, you know, the previous government pardoned, you know, Niger Delta militant, and it was a blanket pardon. So don't some people will say, no, those ones were fighting for resource control, but they were kidnapping, there were killings also, there were some armed robbers also amongst them that were given blanket pardon. Because I remember there was one matter Alagbon was investigating, a guy who was arrested with a vehicle load of guns. And at the end of the day, he said he has embraced amnesty and he's been pardoned. And so the matter ended there. So what government is basically doing is, you know, encouraging criminality. You're telling people, you know, go commit crime, kill people, you know, ransack a village, you know, make money from it, from banditry, and then come around and say, I have repented. And then government will pardon you and then allow you. And then also, indirectly, you're creating lords in these villages. Because a man who's been known to terrorize a village, government would keep him, you know, for some days and say they have rehabilitated him. They push him back to that same community.
Yeah.
When he comes, it's either, you know, those other people would want to take out the revenge on him because the government couldn't revenge on their behalf, a government that sworn to protect them, or he becomes the lord in that community and begins to instill fear in the people. And when that happens, or they are just changing strategy. They've seen now that banditry is on the increase and, you know, government seems helpless in that regard. Police will say the kids have been released. We don't want to discuss whether ransom was paid or not. And so they see that people are making money without even, you know, firing a shot. So why don't we leave the bush, embrace this new program of pardon, and then we change trade? After all, you remember the governor of Katsina State once pardoned some, you know, bandits. But that stop them.
No, it didn't.
It didn't stop. No, in fact, it is so bad now that the man has said, you know what? You just buy guns and protect yourself.
Protect yourself.
Even the Minister for Defense once told us that. For me, it is not a society where you are, the victims are in IDP camps, and then you have the perpetrators of these heinous crimes, you know, in rehabilitation centers, giving uniforms, and in some cases, somebody's even proposing, you know, training for them abroad. For me, it is the worst insult any government can give to its people. I shared a story with you while we're on break of my son who went to the mall, and over the weekend on Saturday, went to the mall at Maryland, and on his way back, you know, in a cab, called me and said that police stopped him. And I said, give the phone to the policeman. I introduced myself. He said they are on stop and search. Stop and search for, because he's putting on a neck chain and a big shirt and, you know, white trainer, so automatically it's Yahoo Yahoo. You're stop and search, you're stopping and searching in Lagos while you are paddling, you know, people who are killing, you know, up north. The message you are telling, you know, Nigerians is that you need to be hardened so that government can pardon you. It's shameless and unfortunate.
Let's take a few thoughts. And before we go to our next story, which of course the Petroleum Industry Act, that's our next issue that we want to talk about this morning. But in the meantime, we will take your thought. 0700-993-993-993 and 01465-7190. Please be brief, straight to the point. We can't take all the calls, so please drop your thought for us on Facebook and YouTube, if you don't mind. Facebook is Nigeria Info 99.3. That's our page there. Our YouTube channel is Nigeria Info 99.3. You can watch live right now, myself and Liberos, and let's know what you think. Let's speak with Don Baba. Don Baba is calling us from Ikeja this morning. Don Baba, morning to you.
Good Good morning, Mr. Sherry.
Morning to you.
Mr. Liberal, good morning, sir.
Yeah, morning, Don Baba.
Thank you, sir. You see, where we are in this country today, I sincerely don't know, and I don't know where we are heading to. Thank God it happens to your son. You know, a few days ago, I was driving with my friends on Ojota Bridge. Go there now. Today is Monday. And see the amount of Nigerian police that lined up there.
Mm.
Looking for a young Nigerian. They arrest us, brand us a Yahoo boy, telling us to give them our phone. This is the same question I asked. Go to Ikorodu, my 12, and everywhere in Lagos, there are street robbery, killing everywhere. The police are nowhere to be found. But they are on the road every day.
Mm.
And this is what you get when government send message like this. Like Mr. Liberal said, you have to be strong. In this country, if you are not stubborn, if you are not strong, if you don't have anything to protect yourself, my brother, forget it. It is unfortunate. Thank you.
Thank you, Don Baba, for calling. We're going to speak with a first-time caller, Abrime. He joins us from Ikpaja this morning. Abrime, morning to you.
Good morning, sir.
Morning to you.
Yeah. You see, this issue of repentant bandits.
Right.
As much as I criticize this government for quite a while, the way of the handle activities, I am worried, these bandits, what exactly do you do with them? Assuming you take them for prosecution, how do you handle the large people that are repentant bandits? Where do you keep them? How do you feed them? How do you take care of them? Assuming you take them to court and they are convicted, they have to go to prison. Where is the prison that can go to prison?
Where is the space?
It keeps me worried, really. I hope your guests will handle that.
Right.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you, too. Abrime, we're going to speak with Benjamin. Benjamin. It's calling us from Ikeja. After this, we'll come to Liberals. Benjamin, morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Sherif.
Morning to you.
Yeah, my greetings to your guest there.
Yeah, good morning, Benjamin.
Yeah, good morning. Sherif, you see, it has come to the stage that our president and the governors are playing with the citizens. And this is not the first time.
Mm.
We've been doing this so many years, and it's more like we Nigerians doesn't care to them because we have no power to do anything. But they have forgotten that the election that they came into positions, we got them in.
Mm.
We have every state, the fixing issue of insecurity, and this thing started giving us signs from the beginning of Jonathan, and we're unable to tackle it now.
Mm.
And this thing has become a worrisome in the northern part of Nigeria, and not only in the northern part, it's coming to the south now, southwest here now. And I have this feeling that the way this situation is going, the time, everybody is going to disperse. Because look at, like the young man that just called the other time, was talking about how police were parading in the other places and they are not doing the right thing. So we need to restructure our system. Like, people are complaining. We should restructure our system. If we cannot restructure the system, bring everything to normal construction, right?
Right.
That means the country will tear apart.
Benjamin, thank you. Thank you for calling me. Appreciate it. Liberals, before we go to the PIA, let me take you up on what Abrime said about perhaps the government is helpless as to where to keep or what to do with the repentant Boko Haram members.
Quickly, the lock, the little lock we still have here, as against what is happening in Afghanistan, is that most of our criminality here is driven by poverty, hunger. And so if you are able to rehabilitate and provide infrastructure, if I'm able to provide infrastructure that will encourage wealth creation, you would reduce this crime. And then what to do with these people? You don't say a man, because the number is too much. And so a man who has killed, you need to push him back to the society because you don't have the facilities to keep them.
Mm.
Build more facilities. Build more facilities.
That's a job after all.
Yes. Build more facilities if you can keep them in those places and rehabilitate them there.
Mm.
So there are some that have committed heinous crime. That is how you know how you begin to profile them. You don't just say, oh, look, we'll keep them for 3 months, 6 months, and then you let them go.
Right.
Build facility. After all, you're building roads. You are building housing estates. Build facilities specially for this set of people. Then you profile them, the hardened ones, the ones that you can rehabilitate, the ones you can train, even inside these places.
Right.
You train them, and when you're sure, years later, that yes, these ones are truly reformed. You know, so it's not enough to say, oh, we don't have facilities to keep them. You have the money to build the facilities where you can keep them.
Indeed. Let's talk about the PIA very quickly. What's your position on it? I mean, there have been arguments as regards the host community fund, 3%, the 30% for frontier basin exploration, and the rest of it.
Yeah, first and foremost, I would want to say I'm happy that the PIB is now a PIA. It's been passed, it's been assented to. Because we have, this bill had been bogged down for more than 10 years at the National Assembly, you know, at every turn, one controversy will bedevil it, you know, or the other. For me, it's been passed. Well, we can only now begin to talk about amendments. Yeah, I would want to also blame, you know, the senators from the South region. Well, nobody heard their voices on this issue of 3% or 5%. But be that as it may, whether 1%, 2%, 3%, 4%, 5%, for me, the key issue is accountability. Yes, you say 3% is small, but a man who can use 3% very well can now begin to say, look, you see how we have utilized 3%. Give us 10, give us 5, or give us more. But if we have not even been able to account for the 13% derivation.
That's right.
Including some of the funds that these oil companies dish out to communities.
To host
in
communities.
Terms of, yeah, to host communities in terms of community relationships and the rest. And in some cases, they call them development levy. We've not been able to account for them properly. Just the same way government has been unable to account for oil revenue.
The other day, they asked NDDC to come and give account. We all saw what happened.
Yeah, exactly. So even in NDDC, you see the communities, some of these community leaders are the contractors in these places. You know, so what we should be concerned about now is that, look, no matter how small or little this money is, let us call our people to account. Anybody that is given these funds for development, he must be able to develop or account for the fund.
Right.
And then, for me, in this era where oil is going out of fashion, the world is diversifying, we are still fixated on 30% of the national total income of NNPC for exploration. Why can't we even do, you know, if we say want to encourage investment in the sector. Is it now that the product is going out of fashion that you want to invest, that you encourage investment in the sector? 5% or maximum 10% would have been enough. Or a situation where you have, you know, a swap arrangement. Yeah. Look, you give exploration licenses, and when you prospect, you give prospecting licenses, when you prospect and discover oil, and then the government can sit down with you for a sharing arrangement.
Right.
That way, you'll be sure, before you go into prospecting, you'll be sure that your geological studies and surveys, you know, is top-notch. But this idea of, you know, keeping a 30% bogus money somewhere for exploration, what it means that anybody can be awarded contract to go and explore. Government pays you. Whether you discover oil or not, it's free money. So these are the problems I have with, you know. So for me, it has been passed. We can only now begin to make provisions for amendments.
Indeed. I'm going to take this one here from Chinedu. Chinedu in VI. Chinedu says, the repentant Boko Haram, why did they pick arm against Nigeria? They should tell us for Nigeria, what Nigeria wants to know. Secondly, Nigeria is sitting on a gunpowder. Some of these Boko Haram boys recruited today will tomorrow be in charge of Nigerian army as captains, commanders, and generals. And you know what that means. Chinedu from VI sent that in via WhatsApp this morning. We'll come to the telephone in a moment, but Liberals, in 2 minutes, what's your thought about the president sanctioning a committee to go examine the grazing areas?
Sheriff, let's even tell ourselves the truth. This the grazing gazette that the president is talking about.
Yeah.
The chairman of that committee that headed that committee that recommended grazing, and the white. It's a gazette, not even a law, a passed law. The recommendation of that same committee in 1965 was that at the end of the day, grazing routes should be a means to an end, that the ultimate end should be ranching. So I wonder, I'm wondering why the president is not looking, you know, at that recommendation, at that proviso. So assuming the Kaduna refinery is on a grazing route, so we are going to pull down some of those structures to accommodate, you know, grazing. You know, it doesn't make sense, because also the question is, that is a 1965 document. It will not solve a 2021 crisis, especially given the fact that in 1978, you have a law that had now put the ownership of land squarely at the doorstep of the people, and the governor is asked to hold it in trust for them. And then in 2021, you have laws enacted by the State House of Assembly outlawing open grazing. And then coupled with the fact that even if you're talking about 21 states,
right,
I mean 27 states, which are not mentioned, in the whole of the South, it is only Oyo that was mentioned in that gazette. And that Oyo that was mentioned was also, that provisions was declared illegal by Justice Adewale Thompson as at that time. So I wonder, even the members of the committee, as highly respected as they are, I expected them to sit down and tell the president that, look, this is not the way to go. You cannot use a 1965 solution to solve a 2021 problem. The problem is, these are private businesses, especially given the fact that the issue of cattle ranching or cattle rearing is a residual, you know, matter for local government, not even for state, not the talk of the president fixated on it. It will not solve the crisis of herders and communal crisis, rather.
Liberal Soshoma, thank you for coming on the show this morning. It's always a pleasure to have you around.
My pleasure.
Lagos, that's our show this morning. Thank you for being a part of it. We're back on your radio tomorrow morning at 5 again to kickstart another round of conversation. Great conversation. Tomorrow, we're looking at the impact of Twitter ban on the young and very productive Nigerian youths. We're having some techpreneurs in the studios and talk to us about how the Twitter ban has affected their livelihoods, because a lot of young people do business on Twitter. It's over 2 months now since the ban. So let's examine the impact so far on businesses and economy of the young people in Nigeria. I am Sheriff Quadri. Well, I'm not going anywhere yet. Table Talk is next. Well, Mima is on vacation, so I'll be standing in, you know, for her. We'll have a conversation that we started like 2 weeks ago on Table Talk. Stay here on Nigeria Info 99.3. Good morning to you.